Webcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
ఓం శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. పూర్ణమద పూర్ణమిదం పూర్ణాత్ పూర్ణముదచ్యతే పూర్ణస్య పూర్ణమాదాయ పూర్ణమేవావశిష్యతే. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. శ్రీ గురుభ్యో నమః. హరి ఓం. వివేక చూడామణి శ్లోక 31. ఏతయోర్మందత తత్ర విరక్తత్వము ముక్షయోః మరౌ సలిలవత్తత్ర శమాధేర్భాన మాత్రత. వి హావ్ బీన్ సీయింగ్ దిస్ శ్లోక ఇన్ ది లాస్ట్ వెబినార్. నౌ శంకరాచార్య ఈజ్ టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ ద వేరియస్ ప్రిపరేషన్స్ రిక్వైర్డ్ ఫార్ అ స్టూడెంట్ హూ ఈజ్ ఇన్ పర్స్యూట్ ఆఫ్ మోక్ష. అండ్ ఫస్ట్ హీ గేవ్ సమ్ జనరల్ ఇంటలెక్చువల్ క్వాలిఫికేషన్స్ లైక్ నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ లాంగ్వేజ్, ability to think and analyze, medhavi, panditaha, all those things he first mentioned. Because jnanam involves knowledge or understanding. And later he talked about the spiritual qualifications called the sadhana, chatushtaka sampatti, viveka, vairagya, shatka sampatti and mumukshutvam. And we gave the four D's: discrimination, dispassion, discipline and desire, as Swamiji would call it, four D's. Then on he tried to arrange the four qualifications in terms of their relative importance, and the most important, the next to the most important, etc., and gave the highest priority to mumukshutvam. So next to that he said it should be vairagyam. So in the shlokas 29 to 31, the Acharya emphasizes mumukshutvam and vairagyam as important qualifications. And in this shloka, shloka 31, the Acharya conveys the same idea as given in the previous shloka, but he put it in a negative language. Previously he said, where vairagyam and mumukshutvam are there alone samadhi shatka sampatti will become fruitful. That's what he said earlier. And this is a positive presentation. We call it anvaya. And now he puts it in a negative form later. Vetireka, where vairagyam and mumukshutvam, where they are not there, in that person, even if he has the samadhi shatka sampatti, concentration, intelligence, all those qualifications, all those things, even if they are there, but still they are like mirage water only, with no use for him. So etayoho mandatha. Suppose these two people are there. Which two? The people who are, who are viraktatva mumukshayoho. Viraktatva, he means what? Vairagyam, dispassion. A person having this dispassion, vairagyam. And mumukshu, desire for moksha is there for that person. He has the passion for moksha. So dispassion for anatma and passion for atma, when that is there, yatra, in which person, where these two things are there, mandaha, when they are, these two things are feeble, mandaha, they are not in full form, tatra, in that person, shamadehe, the savadana satyushtya sampatti is only a mere appearance, like mirage water, in those people. So, marau salilavate, that's what he said. Maru means dry land or desert, and salilam means water. So, desert water here means the mirage water. So, in such, so like mirage water, all other qualifications he may have, but they are all still fruitless. Just as one cannot drink or take bath in a mirage water, one cannot get moksha also through mere sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. So make sure that one is a seeker, he should be a mumukshu. Then alone it will become a spiritual pursuit. So samadhi shatka sampatti is good, but that is not sufficient. So while reading these three shlokas, especially the 29, 30, 31 shlokas, there may seem to be an apparent contradiction which we should carefully analyze and understand. In the 29th shloka, the Acharya said, even mandamukshutvam or feeble desire for moksha will produce phalam. That's what he said earlier. So, mandamadhyama rupapi suyate phalam. That's what he said in the 29th shloka. And in the 31st shloka, he says, yetayoho yatra mandata marau salilavate. Feeble mukshutvam cannot produce result. So, earlier he said, even if feeble mukshutvam is there, it will produce result. But here he is saying it's not. So, it is like maru salila, mirage water. So, the word nishpalam is not used explicitly here. But maru salilavate means what? Like mirage water means nishpalam. So, the question is, how can the Acharya contradict himself in these two shlokas, 29 and 31? For that we say that there is no contradiction at all. If you really see the shlokas, both of them carefully, if we see the 29th shloka, for the feeble mumukshutvam to be fruitful, there is a condition. And in the 31st shloka, that condition is not mentioned. What is the condition? Feeble mumukshutvam will be fruitful only that condition is fulfilled, otherwise it will be fruitless. And that, what is the condition in the 29th shloka? He has used the word there, pravriddha. That is a crucial word. Means what? When it is nourished. So in the 31st shloka, the word pravriddha is not mentioned. That means what? Apravriddha, when it is not nourished. So, if you look at Shloka 29, it will be that feeble mumukshutvam will produce fruitful results when it is nourished and turns into tivra mumukshutvam. So, the feeble mumukshutvam should become tivra mumukshutvam to give benefit based on the 29th Shloka. And in the 31st Shloka, it means feeble mumukshutvam will be worthless when unnourished. So, both are same only. In the other case, when you nourish it, it will be useful. In the other case, if you don't nourish it, it won't be useful. So, what is the final lesson we should learn? When feeble mumukshutvam comes, be happy. Don't be complacent and relaxed. Allow that feeble mumukshutvam to grow by nourishing it like a plant. A plant is very, very feeble and small. But by nourishing it, it grows into a huge tree also. And then it will produce the desired result. This is what we saw in the last class, Shloka 31. Let us continue with Shloka 32 today. Moksha karana samagriyam bhaktireva gariyasi swaswarupanusandhanam bhaktiritya vidhiyate. One of the very important shlokas, often quoted by various people for various end use. In this shloka, the Acharya is introducing another important sadhana or preparatory step in addition to the sadhana, samadhi, shatka, sampatti, all those things. It is bhakti. He brings the concept of bhakti. And bhakti here is a very confusing word. It has got so many meanings, so many interpretations. So we have to understand the word correctly. Very important if you have to understand this shloka correctly. And one popular meaning of bhakti is what? Bhakti is love of God. It's called devotion. That's good. That's a very common meaning. That's okay. But here bhakti is presented as a sadhana that one has to practice. One has to do something. It is not just emotional thing. One has to do something. Love of God is not something you do. For example, we love our child. We love our child all the time. We don't do anything. We enjoy throughout loving our children. So, bhakti is an attitude that we enjoy, that is love of God. But here we are not talking about bhakti as an attitude that we enjoy, but as a sadhana, what bhakti is. So, what particular action refers to bhakti? Which particular pursuit means bhakti? And that's what the Acharya talks about. Is going to a temple or doing some nama japa? What is bhakti? So, when we refer to bhakti as a sadhana, it does not refer to any particular action. But as sadhana, bhakti refers to a series of spiritual disciplines, not just a particular action, a series of spiritual disciplines Then the next question will be, what is that series of practices which are known as, which are grouped here as bhakti? Karma or karma yoga, upasana or samadhi yoga, or jnanam or scriptural study, all of them, they all can be grouped into that category. Karma yoga also is bhakti because it is doing our duties as a dedication to the Lord. We already mentioned here, Ishwara Arpana Buddhi. So with that, as an offering to the Lord, we do all those things. Karma yoga is also bhakti. Upasana also is called bhakti because it involves meditation upon the Lord. And scriptural study also is called bhakti because in that we inquire into the nature of God. So whether it is karma yoga, whether it is upasana, whether it is scriptural study, all of them can be called bhakti. There, you know, in the scriptural study, we ask the questions, who is God? What is His function? What is His nature? Is He or a she or it? What is the relationship of me with Him or her or it, whatever it is? All these, they involve the Lord and the love for Lord. Since love for Lord is common in all the three, so this series of sadhanas put together is a means to moksha. So whether it is karma yoga, upasana, and all these inquiry, they all are steps towards moksha. All these put together. Because all these put together, we call them as bhakti. That would means what? All the three are indispensable. One cannot say, I will just only practice karma yoga. I don't need upasana and jnana yoga. Or I will practice only jnana yoga. I don't need other two. There is no question of any choice among the three because each of them has its own contribution. Like the various nourishments. You know, for the body, we need so many nourishments. What karma yoga contributes, upasana and jnana yoga cannot. What upasana contributes, the other two cannot. And what jnana yoga contributes, karma yoga and upasana cannot. So all the three are indispensable and therefore we should never compare them. We should never compare karma yoga with upasana or jnana yoga. All of them have independent contributions. Even though we cannot compare them directly and try to find which is superior or anything, we can do one type of comparison. And what is that? Which one of the three is closest to the end result? That we can analyze. And which one is the farthest to the end result? What is closest to the end result and what is farthest to the end result? Or we can call it as direct means and indirect means, proximate and remote. So all that thing we can analyze. Like for example, removing the hunger of a person. Somebody is hungry, we want to remove the hunger. If that is the objective or if that is the end, it involves many things. What are the things? We have to buy material, we have to cook, we have to do so many things. Food is, you know, for cooking food, we have got all the other things that are needed for cooking and eating. All those things are needed. And among all these various things, which one is dispensable? Nothing is dispensable because we need material to cook, we need people to cook, we need the person to eat, to serve. All those things are needed. Nothing is dispensable. And all these are equally important because one cannot exist without the other. So we should never compare all those things. If at all we want to compare, it cannot be because of importance, but it can be in terms of proximity to the end result. Of these various factors, which is the proximate thing to remove hunger? Eating is the closest step and final step to remove hunger. So eating helps in the culmination of hunger or of our pursuit. So if at all we talk about any superiority, we can say eating is most important. Even if the food is ready, everything is ready. If I don't eat, I cannot quench my hunger. So when we say eating is most important, that does not mean other things are dispensable. But what we mean is that that alone is the final step which produces the result directly, namely removing hunger. To put in another language, between eating and hunger removal, the relationship is direct relationship. I eat, my hunger is gone. Whereas between cooking and hunger removal, there is a relationship, but not direct, but through eating only. Through eating only, I made the food, but till I eat, hunger will not be gone. So, Sakshat Sambandha and Parampara Sambandha, there are the two different things. Similarly, Karma and Upasana and Jnanam and the three sadhanas, all those, they are all, these are all three sadhanas. Moksha is the sadhya, is the end result. And if you want to find out which has got direct Sambandha and which has got Parampara Sambandha, that is not direct Sambandha, then we will find out that Karma and Moksha have got only Parampara Sambandha, no direct Sambandha. Karma does not produce instant moksha, just as buying rice will not instantly remove hunger. Similarly, Upasana and Moksha also do not have direct Sambandha, but only Parampara Sambandha. Whereas Jnana and Moksha, they have got instantaneous relationship like eating and removal of hunger. And therefore, Shankaracharya, he says that Bhakti in the form of Jnana Yoga is the very important sadhana in this shloka. Bhakti in the form of Karma Yoga and Upasana are all important. But the Acharya focuses here highest level of bhakti in the form of Jnana Yoga inquiry, scriptural study consisting of Shravanam, Mananam and Nididhyasanam. Shravanam means what? Consistent and systematic study under a guru. Very important. We are going to see details of that in the next shloka. Mananam is dwelling upon it and until I am convinced. And Nididhyasanam is assimilating the teaching, transforming my lifestyle itself. There should be a change in my life. Assimilation leading to transformation. So this is called Jnana Yoga or Vedanta, Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. In English we can call it scriptural inquiry. So Shankaracharya emphasizes here scriptural study, which is called Bhakti. So here scriptural study is called bhakti and we already saw how this analysis took place. So what level of bhakti? The highest level of bhakti, and that's what he says here when we look at the shloka. Moksha karana samagriyam, first line. Samagri means the group of sadhanas here. Why do we say a group? Because viveka also a means of moksha, vairagya also, samadhi shatka sampatti also, mumukshutvam, they are all means of moksha. So many preparations are there. In this group of preparatory steps, Samagriyam, which are all Moksha Karanam, they are all means, the various ways to attain Moksha, either directly or indirectly. The most important or direct one for Moksha is Bhaktihi Eva. Bhakti alone, yes. The direct relationship with Moksha. Gariyasi. Bhakti eva gariyasi, the highest. Bhakti is the highest. Here it means the closest or most proximate. And once Shankaracharya uses the word bhakti, then we will have a question, because we said bhakti refers to what? The three levels of sadhanas, karma, upasana and scriptural study. So which form of bhakti he says? Karma yoga form of bhakti or upasana form of bhakti? Or scriptural study form of bhakti. What he says here? Which bhakti the Acharya means? The Acharya does not want any confusion at all. He doesn't want to leave any stone unturned. And defines bhakti as he means in the first line of the shloka. What is bhakti here? Swaswarupa anusandhanam. Dwelling upon, indicating the practice of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam on Swaswarupaha. One's own true nature, that alone he calls it bhakti. We are not talking about Rama or Krishna or Venkatachalapati or Ayyappa bhakti here. Swaswarupa anusandhanam. All the other levels of bhakti at the Karma Yoga and Upasana levels, we have got those gods, that's all fine. But the highest level of bhakti is inquiry into the very self. So swaswarupam. There also he uses the word swaswarupam, because when we say inquiry into oneself, a person may interpret it as the study of the anatomy of the body, like the kidneys, the brain, the pancreas, they are all about myself. or study at the psychology, self, they are also self-inquiry. So the Acharya says, we are not talking about the superficial layers of the individual. We are not talking about the Sthula Sharira inquiry, Sukshma Sharira inquiry, not even Karna Sharira inquiry. We have to go through all of them. But ultimately, we are dealing with what? Sthulam, Sukshmam, Karana Shariraat Vetiriktaha, Avastatraya Sakshi, Panchakosha Vilakshanaha, Satchidananda Swarupaha, Atma. For people who have attended the Tattva Bodha lectures, they would be all very familiar with these terms. If not, please refer to those notes. They are all in the website. The lectures are there and notes are also there. Please look at them. So, of course, we will make this Sthula Sharira inquiry, we will make. We will try to inquire about the body, gross body, subtle body, all that. Not as an end in itself, like an anatomy student, but only as a stepping stone. The aim is not to dwell upon the Sthula Shariram, the gross body. Similarly, mind inquiry, to a limited extent one can do, but one has to move on. To indicate that, Shankara uses the word Swaswarupam, the Atma which is beyond the Anatma, the body. Then the question will be, how can you dwell upon the Atma? Because Atma or consciousness is never available as an object. You cannot objectify. That is the biggest problem. Brain is available for objectification. Body is available for objectification for study. What will you do with consciousness? For science, matter alone is available. And the biggest problem science has is how to study consciousness. In fact, they are even confused in which branch of science we should put consciousness. Unfortunately, consciousness is not available for conception or perception. How to study? So dwelling upon the self, that means dwelling upon the scriptures. Because scriptures serve as a mirror in looking at my own consciousness. As Swamiji says, we cannot see our own eyes directly. If we have to see our eyes, what we need? We need the medium of mirror. The only method I have is to have a mirror. When I look at the mirror, what does it appear? It appears as though I look outside. The fact is what? I am not looking outside, and the fact is I am looking into myself only. Similarly, scriptural inquiry is not an objective inquiry. Scriptures, they are the mirror which reflects and talks about the very subject, the Atmaswarupam. The subject is Atma, Atmaswarupam. Therefore, Swaswarupa Anusandhanam means scriptural Anusandhanam. Atma Vichara is equal to Shastra Vichara. There is no Atma Vichara without Shastram. There is no self-inquiry without scriptural inquiry. This inquiry is called Bhakti Iti Abhidiyate. That is how it is known. So, this Bhakti alone, in the fourth chapter of Gita, the Lord called it as Jnana Yajna. All other Yajnas like Pujas, various Yagas, pilgrimage, etc. They are also called Yajnas, which are expressions of one's Bhakti. But among various expressions of Bhakti, Krishna includes what? He includes Jnana Yajna. Says it as also a Puja. But says, Shreyan Dravyamayate Jnate Jnana Yajna Parantapaha. The scriptural study is the highest form of worship. Jnana Yajna Parantapaha. So we should not think that we are studying Vedanta instead of doing some puja or some homa or some bhajan. Will we get punya? Because when we do bhajan, when we do puja, we think that we are going to get punya directly. If I am doing Vedanta Shravanam, I am not doing those puja and all, will I get any benefit, any punyam at all? Is it correct or wrong? This is also one of the forms of worship only. In fact, according to Krishna, this is the greatest form of worship. Vedanta Shravanam, self-inquiry, is the greatest form of worship. And so, Bhaktihi Iti Abhidiyate, self-inquiry is the highest form of Bhakti. Shloka 33. స్వాత్మ తత్వానుసంధానం భక్తిరిత్య పరే జగుహు ఉక్త సాధన సంపన్నః తత్వజిజ్ఞాసురాత్మనః ఉపసీదేద్ గురుం ప్రాజ్ఞం యస్మాద్ బంధ విమోక్షణం. We read the first line of the next shloka also. So here the Acharya gives another definition for bhakti. Almost same as the previous definition, only a very subtle technical difference he makes. We saw swaswarupa anusandhanam means self-enquiry, otherwise called jivatma vicharaha. Self means the individual, the jivatma. So that's what we interpreted as swaswarupam anusandhanam, as self-enquiry. That is the first definition. Here, in the second definition, Acharya makes it more precise. So he says, mere jivatma enquiry is not enough. How do you know whether the inquiry is proper and sufficient? Have we made inquiry in the right track or to the right extent? How do we know? He says, jivatma enquiry culminating in the discovery of the identity of the jivatma with paramatma. That alone is the end. So he says, swatma tattva anusandhanam. Tattvam, this word tattvam is should be understood properly. Tattvam should be understood as tattvam. Tat means Brahman. Tvam means Brahmatvam. So tattvam here means Brahmatvam and not the tattvamasi tattvam. Tattvamasi. Incidentally, in Sanskrit, the word tattvam can be split in two ways. One way is what? Tattvam has two separate words, tat and tvam, in tattvamasi. Here, when you split it that way, tat means that, and tvam means you. So, that Brahman and you. Asi, asi padam indicates the aikyam. The you and the Brahman are one and the same. That's what tattvamati says. But another way of interpreting this tattvam is, tattvam has only one word, not as tat and tvam, but as one word. In that, tat is one part and tvam is only a suffix, which has a meaning of hood or ness, like oneness or nobleness, boyhood, motherhood. So it should be taken that way. So here, tattvam is to be interpreted in which way? In the second interpretation only, that means tat means Brahman and tvam is a suffix which means hood or ness. So tattvam means Brahmanhood or Brahmanness. We should not look at words in the dictionary for all this, but it is Brahmanhood or Brahmanness. So that's what tattvam means. Therefore, swatma tattvam means discovering Brahmanhood of jivatma. That's what it means. So discovering the purnatvam of jivatma. Discovering the paramatmatvam of jivatma. Discovering the divinity or godliness of the jivatma. That's what it means. So only then the inquiry is complete. So that is how one can find out the inquiry is complete. That is, till I say I am God. I should have no doubt in that. I should just say I am God, period. Till that time the inquiry should continue. At the beginning I need the blessing of God for pursuing in this way, that's okay. But when you culminate the study, you should be able to say, I am God. Aham Brahma Asmi. The whole world rests in me. I should be able to say, Mayeva Sakalam Jatam, Mayi Sarvam Pratishtitam, Mayi Sarvam Layam Yati. As Krishna said, the whole world is born out of me, rests in me, and dissolves in me, the Chaitanyam. When I say me, me is not the body, the Chaitanya. This owning up of Brahmanhood is defined as bhakti. So, what is the difference between the two? So, the Vedantic bhakti and the common bhakti that we are all used to, we should be able to differentiate them in this manner. So, what is the difference between the two definitions? Self-enquiry is bhakti, that's the first definition. And inquiring into the Brahmanhood of the self is the second definition. And as we said, the difference is only minute and it's a technical difference. For all practical purposes, scriptural study is bhakti. With this, the next preparatory step is also over. So now what are the steps we have seen so far? First one is the intellectual qualifications, the ability and all that. And the second one is Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampattihi. And the third one is scriptural study. Now, what will be the next one? He says, scriptural study is not possible without the guidance of a teacher. One needs a guru. For scriptural study, for successful spiritual study, one needs a guru. That is important. So, that is the next step. So, it is impossible. Or even if it is made possible by some reason, it will not be fruitful, or it may be even counterproductive without a teacher if one attempts to learn Vedanta. That is why in all scriptures, they uniformly emphasize the inevitability of a guru. Krishna tells in the Gita, Tadviddhi pranipadena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninaha tattvadarshinaha. He said, in Mundaka Upanishad, very clearly, Tad Vijnanartham Sagurumyeva Abhigachet Samitpanihi Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Very clear. So the scriptures uniformly declare that Guru is a must. It is not a choice, it is a must. And the moment we say Guru is a must, then our mind will immediately will go to some exceptional cases and it will start analyzing. You know, that some people did not have a guru at all. They also got moksha. Buddha sat under a tree and he realized. How do we know whether he had a guru or not? We don't know anyway, that's what the stories we believe. So, we are believing the story part. Then we will say, then why do you believe that story? You can also believe this one, that Vedas say that you need a guru. We can say that way also. But still, let us assume that it is true. And we may have a few examples also where Guru was not there. Then what do we say for that? We say Guru is a must, is the general rule. And without a Guru, some people have gained knowledge, that may be an exception. And whenever we talk about a rule, do we go by a rule or the exception? We go by the rule only. For example, Ramanujan was a great mathematician. A great mathematical knowledge he had without a guru. Then therefore my child also can study mathematics without going to school? No, our child does not even understand even after going to school. How do we then expect the child to learn by itself? So similarly, Mandel and Srinivas, people like the prodigies, they self-taught. But if I have to make my children study music, they have to go through a guru only, no choice. So suppose a person argues that he or she comes under the exceptional category, somebody might argue, no exceptional category. Fine, then we will say we wish them well, and we do even namaskaram to them, and we don't talk anymore of that. So what we say is, majority, they do not come under exception. Therefore, Vedic crowd talks for the common, ordinary case of people. We should not follow those Mahatmas who come under exception. So respect the exceptional, who are called spiritual prodigies perhaps, but do not follow the exception. When there is, you know, Chakkani Raja Margamu, Vaidika Marga, we should follow only that Marga. We cannot go through these shortcuts. So Shankaracharya says, Gurum Upasidet. One should go to a guru who Ukta Sadhana Sampannaha. The one who has gone through the previous preparatory steps himself, basic educational qualifications, you know, some thinking power, sadhana chatushtaya sampatti, all those he has, and who is endowed with the samadhi shatka sampatti. So, ukta sadhana sampannaha, sadhana chatushtaya sampannaha, and tattva jignyasuhu, who wants to practice bhakti, what type of bhakti? Self-inquiring bhakti. And what is that? Swatma Tattva Anusandhanam. Therefore, Tattva Jignyasu means Swatma Tattva Jignyasu, one who wants this Brahmanhood. That's what he wants to study. I am not a miserable jiva, not a slave, not a mortal, not a finite entity, but I am the glorious Brahman. One who wants to know this is a Tattva Jignyasu. Is a Tattva Jnyasu. So the Acharya himself clarifies that Atmanaha Tattva Jnyasu. Atmanaha means what? His own self. So Atmanaha Tattva Jnyasu. Jivatmanaha Paramatvat paramatmatva jignyasuho. Such a person should do what? Gurum upasidet. He should go to a guru. He should approach a guru. That's what he should do. And who must be a guru? Prajna. Prajna means what? Jnani guru he should be. He should be a prajna. If he is an ajnani guru, he can distribute only what? Only ajnana. Ajnani guru will give only ajnana. He should be a sadguru, not a sad guru. So literally the word guru, guru means what? Grinnati upadishati iti guruho. It is derived from the root gr, to communicate. One who has got the unique method of communicating the incommunicable Brahman. Because all the time we say, Brahman cannot be communicated. Yato avacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha. All the Upanishads say, cannot be communicated. But what all Upanishads talk about? Only Brahman. All Upanishads say that it cannot be communicated, but all of them talk about only Brahman. That means what? It cannot be normally communicated, but by adapting an appropriate method, it can be communicated. So Vedanta is communicable, has been successfully communicated also. And what is the proof for that? The very Guru-Sishya Parampara itself is the proof. Because the Guru-Sishya Parampara is there continuously. In Keno Upanishad, the teacher says, it cannot be communicated. Then the student is frustrated. Na vidmo, na vijanimo, yataitatim, anusishyat. He says, oh Sishya, I don't know how it can be communicated to you. Then the student gets frustrated. And the teacher says, however, my guru used some method by which I was able to understand. And that abnormal method I will use for you also. So, teaching without teaching. Kuramal Kurinar, in Tamil we say, and the student also Puriyamal Purindukondar. Swamiji says, whether he understood or not, that's what the Upanishad says. Naham manye suvedeti nona vedeti vedacha. Yonas tadveda tadveda nona vedeti vedacha. Teacher asks the student, did you understand? Student says, I understood. Not that I understood. I did not understand. Not that I did not understand. I understood. I did not understand. What does it communicate? So, we will have occasion to see this in detail when we do go to Keno Upanishad. Maybe after Isavasya, I plan to do Keno Upanishad. At that time, we will see. So, what is meant here is, it can be communicated through appropriate methods. So, he is called a guru, the master communicator. So, what type of communicator? Prajnaha. Prajnaha means well-informed, very knowledgeable. He has the knowledge and he also knows how to transfer that knowledge, how to communicate that knowledge. And such a guru one should go to. So, yasmatim bandha vimokshanam. By that alone, yasmatim, by going to a guru alone, bandha vimokshanam bhavati. There will be freedom from bondage. Bandha is bondage, freedom from bondage. Then what is the next preparation then? Next preparation is, so the guru is a must, that is told already. The next preparation is approaching a guru through which alone one can be freed from bondage. Now when we say the person should have the basic capacity to understand and analyze, should be sadhana chatushtaya sampannaha, etc., should study scriptures and go to a guru, we may have a doubt that many of us may not qualify to study Vedanta because we are not, you know, qualified people from that point of view. We said earlier itself, no one can fulfill all the qualifications 100%. An ideal student is like an ideal gas in chemistry. It does not exist. So, except in the Upanishadic context, where a student like Nachiketas was there or Narada was there, some rare student, we don't know whether they are factual or fictitious also. The fact is what? There is no ideal student. No one has got the fullest measure of sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. Whether a person is fully qualified or not, study of scriptures always has a benefit. It can never go waste. Even mere listening to the words of scriptures, they themselves are capable of giving punyam. In the 18th chapter, Krishna says, Shraddhavan anasuyascha. Shrunuyadabhi yonaraha, shrunuyadabhi, just by listening. Sopi muktaha shubhan lokan, prapniyat punya karmanam. So there is another benefit also. Even if we are not interested in moksha, at least we will have our priorities in life, you know, clearly set up. Also the capacity to analyze the means and the ends properly. We will develop all those capacities, which we generally don't do since, you know, life is so mechanical. We keep on doing things. We don't have time to analyze. At least we will stop for a minute and ask the question, is there something more to life? Such questions we will ask. And importantly, the Vedanta Shravanam is capable of giving Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampatti also. So one who does not have Viveka, if he comes to Vedanta, he will develop Viveka. If they lack Vairagya, he will get Vairagya. If he does not have, you know, Shraddha in Vedanta, he will gain Shraddha in Vedanta. So Vedanta Shravanam itself is capable of giving Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampatti. If not anything, minimally one can get at least good sleep sometimes. I don't know about the class, but so these are, I'm just joking. Swamiji makes these jokes sometimes. So these are positive effects of Vedanta. Then what about the minus points? If a person does not have full qualification, he does not get the full benefit of Vedanta, which is Jivan Mukti. He gets so many avantara phalam, secondary benefits, he can get many of them. But the primary benefit of Jivan Mukti, he will not get. And another minus point is, a person comes to Vedanta without a qualification. He will listen to the Jivan Mukta, a liberated person. And the scriptures, what they say, that a jnani, a liberated person, is beyond dharma and adharma, religion, varna, ashrama, all those things. He is beyond all of them. He is free from all rules and regulations. He is utterly free to do whatever he wants to do. Vedanta tells about Jivan Mukta. So, total freedom is given by the scriptures for a jnani. Why? Because Shruti knows, the Veda scriptures, they know that a jnani will not abuse the freedom. And jnani follows dharma spontaneously. Until jnanam came, he had to follow dharma deliberately. After jnanam, he is given freedom because dharma, religion, values, acharas, they all have become spontaneous for him. No more effort needed. But when a person is not mature enough and does not understand the significance, he may abuse the provision and may even say that I am dharma adharma abhyam vimuktaha. He may drop even the religious life and he may, you know, he may be following whatever he would like to follow. He may even claim superiority sometimes. And Krishna strongly warns in the third chapter, Na buddhi bedam janayet ajnanam karma sanginam. Krishna says in the third chapter and he warns. So a Vedantic teacher should be very clear that a student does not drop religion anytime. He should make sure. So whether he becomes a jnani or not, as long as one is in society and in family, he should continue the religious life and disciplines. If at all he has to give up, he can give up under one condition, when he becomes a paramahamsa parivrajaka sannyasi and he does not live in the society, takes to a life in the forest. So this risk is there when one learns Vedanta without Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampatti, without the required qualifications. So how to avoid this risk? By telling myself, whatever I study, I continue to follow my religious way of life. I should tell myself all the time. If that is taken care of, Vedanta will never be a risk. So this is the answer to the question, can we study Vedanta without Sadhana Chaturshtaya Sampatti? And the second question is, Shankaracharya has said that one should acquire the qualification but does not say how to acquire them. Shankaracharya says one should acquire the qualifications but he does not say how to acquire them. And again, the means of acquiring the qualifications is a religious life. It's very important. What do we mean by religious life? Karma Yoga and Upasana. That's what we mean by religious life. What is Karma Yoga? We have seen that earlier. It is converting our life into a worship. our normal day-to-day life converted to a worship. And Upasana is preparing the mind for pursuing the Saguna Ishwara Dhyanam. And in this is included the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali also. It is a beautiful method of integrating the personality, Yama, Niyama, all those various Ashtanga Yogas of Patanjali. So Shankaracharya calls it Samadhi Yoga. So Karma Yoga, Upasana, Ashtanga Yoga, all these put together we call as the religious lifestyle of a person. So this will include our Nitya Karmas, our prayers, our values, our attitudes in the religious lifestyle. So the means of Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti is a religious lifestyle. Such a person should go to a guru. That's what Acharya says. Let us go to the next shloka. Shrotriyo Vrijino Kama Hatoyo Brahma Vittamaha Brahmanya Parata Shantaha Nirindana Ivanalaha Ahetuhadaya Sinduhu Banduran Bandurana Matam Satam. So in this shloka, the Acharya is talking about the qualifications of the teacher, Guru Lakshana. Qualifications of a teacher. What is the first one? Shrotriyaha. This is one of the most important qualifications. Means what? One who has studied the scriptures under a guru. The primary qualification of a guru. The primary qualification of a guru is what? He should be a Sishya earlier. He should have been a student. We do accept that there are some jnanis without a guru, as exceptional cases, as we said earlier, Vamadeva Rishi and all those people. We say such people, they are all glorious, they are worth worshipping, they are all Jivan Muktas, all are correct, but they cannot function as a good guru. In any field, a prodigy or a person like that, great qualification, it's a general rote, they may not make a good teacher. So Shrotriha means, so Shrutartha Sampannaha, one who has done the Shravanam. And the second reason is what? That scriptures talk about the systematic method of communicating the uncommunicable Brahman. So that systematic method is called Sampradayaha, which is the scriptures use as a key. And if a person has not come in a Sampradaya, then all his statements will be what? Like mystic statements. The so-called jnanis without proper guru are mystics only. Without communicating anything and so can never become a teacher of Vedanta. But the jnani who has done through a guru is called by Shankaracharya as a sampradaya vith. So the Acharya even goes one step further to say asampradaya vith. Upekshaniyaha. One should not depend on him for one's spiritual growth. Upekshaniyaha. So the Acharya says, Shrotriyaha, one who has studied the scriptures under a guru. And the next qualification of a guru is Avrijinaha, one who is pure, paparahitaha, or adharmarahitaha, the person. So who has the values mentioned in the scriptures? Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Kshantihi, Arjavam, Acharyopasanam, all those things. One who is not an immoral person, unethical person, a pure person. Then the third qualification of a guru is Akamahataha. One who does not have any expectations from anyone, from the students particularly, like money, fame, status. To tell the truth freely, the teacher should be fearless. That means what? He cannot have any dependency on any person or anything in society. If he has dependency, he may be afraid. So he has to be fearless. So akamahataha, he is kamarahitaha and therefore bayarahitaha. Yes, he has no desire, he has no bayam also. Then brahmavittamaha, one who is a sthitapragnaha, in Gita language, second chapter, one who has got clear knowledge of Brahman, not vague or doubtful knowledge. Dayananda Swami says, if Aham Brahmasmi is vague, then Tattvamasi also will be vague. Means what? If I have to tell the student that you are Brahman, it is possible only when it is very clear for me that I am Brahman. So, one should be ajnana rahitaha, samshaya rahitaha, without ajnana, without doubts. Therefore, brahma vittamaha, that suffix tamaha, indicates that this knowledge is thorough, is firm in this teacher. And Kathopanishad says, ananya prokte gatiratra nasti, aniyan hyatarkya anupramana. We already saw that in Kathopanishad. When a teacher talks about Brahman, he should feel that he is talking about whom? Himself, called Ananyavakta, for whom Brahman is not an object, but is himself. He is talking about, when he talks about Brahman, he should know, he should realize, he should feel that he is talking about himself. When such a teacher communicates, the student will just understand, spontaneously understand, helplessly understand. Gatiratra nasti, even if he does not want to get the knowledge, he will still get it. The next qualification is Brahmani uparataha, one who abides in Brahman, his own nature, with total contentment and satisfaction. Atmaneva atmana tushtaha, his satisfaction does not depend on any external factor whatsoever. So the mind is tranquil, it will be subsided without any anxiety, worry, called uparataha, resolved, completely resolved. So Brahmani uparataha, abiding in Brahman. That alone we call it as Brahma Nishtaha. So previously we talked about Shrotriyaha, now we are talking about Brahma Nishtaha. Shrotriyam Brahma Nishtaha, Munda Gopanishad. So Shantaha, one who is tranquil, which can be inferred from the Vyavaharas, how he conducts himself in day-to-day life. All the physical, verbal transactions of him, they will be indicative of how composed and how tranquil one is. Dukkeshu anudvignamanaha sukeshu vigataspruhaha vitaraga bayakrodaha sthitadir munirichyate. That's what Krishna said. So, what is the example given here? It's a beautiful example. Nirindanaha analaha iva. Like that person will be like what? Like the glowing embers of the fire. Embers, glowing embers. You know, in which further fuel is not added. You don't add any more fuel. The glow, the glowing ember of the fire. When you add fuel, what will happen? It will come forth. Flames will come up and down. It will go up and down. That mind is compared to a fire. Imagine two types of fire, for example. One in which you are adding various things, fuel. The tongues are flames. They come forth asking for more and more. And another one where you do not add any fuel, it is without any flame, only the glow. So similarly, the mind is compared to fire. Our mental disturbances are supposed to be compared to the flames. Disturbanceless mind is like the flameless fire in the form of embers. So that's what, that is comparison here. So Dayan Swami says that the color of the dress of a sannyasi is comparable to the glowing embers. No more need or want for them is indicated by the saffron color. They are all nitya triptaha, purnaha. Triptosmi, purnosmi is what they say all the time. Nir indanaha, indanaha means fuel. Nir indanaha means no fuel. Analaha means fire. So if he does not have any need, if he is happy with himself, then what will be the motive behind his teaching? This person is happy with himself, has no need at all. Why should he teach? What will be the motive behind his teaching? Why should he teach at all? What is it that makes him to teach? He says, Ahetuka Daya Sindhu. What a beautiful expression. Because of compassion for the student, which is not also something entertained deliberately, but it is natural. Just as what? The sun gives out the light and energy to the world without any motive. It is the very nature of sun. Similarly, here also, when fullness or purnatvam is discovered in the person, compassion is not an effort, is not entertained with any effort. It becomes natural. Advesta sarvabhutana maitra karuna evacha. Karunyam, compassion. And compassion comes when? When we see someone is suffering. When he sees anybody suffering, compassion automatically comes. And when he sees any samsari, compassion is natural. He sees all samsaris, compassion. So natural or spontaneous daya, compassion, is the force behind his teaching. He teaches because he sees these samsaris and he wants to help them spontaneously. So he just teaches them. It is not a planned action. It just happens. And how much compassion he has? Daya sindhu, an ocean of compassion, sindhu. And ahetukaha, without any reason, without any means. It is natural. It is spontaneous. Therefore, only anatma. So, that is only, it is anamatam bandhu. Anamatam bandhu. Anamatam bandhu. He is a friend of all the people who surrender to him. Anamatam. Those who surrender to him. Saranagatam. Namaskritanam. Bhaktanam. To all those people. He is close to all of them. Paraladam bandhu. So, prapanna parijathaya. So, prapannanam bandhu. Then one might ask, is it not partial that he will only be close to people who surrender to him? If he helps only those people who surrender to him and not other people, will it not be partial? Because he is a jivan muktaha. He can say jnani. He cannot be like that. No. He is willing to help the others also, but only when the others can take it. So, giving is possible when? Only when there is a taker. Those who have surrendered are willing to take help. So he helps. The others are not willing to take his help. He is helpless. He is helpless. Yeah, they are not willing to take his help. So being helpless, he cannot help them also. So, anamatam bandhu. There also he is not going to teach all those who have surrendered. Because there also he is going to use his caution. Whom he will teach what? Here he puts a condition. Satam anamatam. Satam. That what is the, he puts a condition. Satpurushaha means jnana yogyaha. People who are qualified. If they do not have the yogyata for jnanam, he will not give them knowledge. He will put them into some other things. He will give them other sadhanas. As Krishna said in the third chapter, you know, shakta karmanya vidvamsaha. Yata kurvanti bharata. Kuryad vidvamstata shaktaha. Chikirshur loka sangraham. That's what he said. So, when such people come, the jnani also should do all pujas, prayers, all that he will also do, and indirectly teach them also to do those things, because they are not fit for jnanam yet. But the teaching he should not give if the student is not ready, jnana marga is not available to them yet, because they are not ready yet. So, that is how he will not do them. So, this anamatam satam bandhu. He will be a helper, he will be a savior for those people who are in samsara. But if they are qualified to learn, to pursue jnana marga, he will teach them. Otherwise, he will put them in the proper direction depending on their level of bhakti and qualification. So, we will continue in the next webinar. Yo veda dausvara prokto vedante cha pratishtitaha tasya prakriti leena seya parasamaheshwaraha Sri Krishna arpanam.